like the Mantis. We always get our man.
Mrs. Peacock was a man?
Would anyone care for fruit or dessert?
What is it they say? You know, you see one scorpion, there's like 1,000 in the walls or something?
I don't think that's scorpions, and I'm not...
Just roaches?
Oh, yeah, we get those too.
Oh. Do the scorpions and the roaches fight to the death?
That would be nice, but the scorpions would be outnumbered. The roaches come out when the moisture is present on the grass. They like to roam around in the wet grass. I don't know why.
That's gross.
Yeah. It wasn't so bad this year. We didn't really get a whole lot of scorpions or roaches or anything up until basically this past week, in which we saw one scorpion outside on a wall and one inside on a wall near my bedroom.
Wasn't that because it was like the driest year ever known to man?
Well, the scorpions come inside because they're generally looking for cold tile to rest their stomachs on or something. I don't know. But, nah, I mean, the moisture is always from the sprinklers anyway, so.
You gotta water the desert.
Yeah, right. I watered the desert by way of broken pipes this weekend.
Yeah, so it exploded.
Well, it appears to have been slowly leaking for a while, the water heater, and then the rust on the bottom gave way and leaked all over the garage, through the wall, and into our closet.
That's really nice.
Yeah, my shoes were wet. And it's hilarious because we thought it was the toilet, which is right next to that closet. So I went and I shut that off, you know, because there's a little shutoff valve that connects to the wall. Later, once we realized that it was actually the water heater, a much bigger problem, I went to turn that the shutoff back on so we could use that toilet again. And the shutoff knob broke off in my hand and started spraying me with water at like a comically high pressure, just like firing across the room. So I like plugged it with my thumb long enough to have Amanda go shut off the outside, the whole water for the house.
That's not fun.
It was kind of hilarious because it's like, all right, we finally got everything fixed and settled, and we're fine. We know what we got to fix. We know what we got to do. Who we got to call and all that. And then I tried to put things back to normal. Yeah, I got to call the Ghostbusters to get the corroded 1998 water heater out of our garage. Mm-hmm. And it was just a refreshing blast of water coming from the wall. It was fun.
Exciting.
Yeah. No. Nope. Now it's just a matter of, I got a nice new water heater, which mm-hmm. is great because the other one apparently had never had any maintenance done on it, and it was just full of the horrible crystallized garbage that is in our hard water and didn't really work very well. But now that we have a fancy new one, I have very high pressure scalding hot water, and it is delightful.
That's just what I want in the desert.
It's nice,
drying, scalding water.
Well, I mean, you know. It's we keep it nice and cool inside, and when you want a nice hot shower, they offset themselves. It's carbon offset credits or whatever they're called.
Yes.
Yeah.
No.
Man, I am so effing tired.
You sound incredibly tired.
Do I? I can't even.
You're like barely talking at normal speed.
The speed, yeah, sure. It's more a matter of the fact that the next word that is about to come out of my mouth is not in my head until it is almost coming out my mouth.
That's what, never mind. So, yeah. what would you like to, should we get started with this?
How are you still awake, though, is the question, because you were up all damn night writing, like, 8 different blog posts.
Oh, I don't know. I took a nap yesterday afternoon, and I think that's part of the reason what kept me up. I was certainly tired today, though. But I got a bit of a second wind right now. I always get like a bit of a second wind right when I get off work. I think it's because my brain realizes that, hey, you're not at work. So that's good. Here, so have some endorphins and stuff. Mm. Because it's one of those things where you can, like, if I were to plot it, you could see like my energy level start up pretty low at the beginning of the day and then go up around lunchtime, and then slowly declining back down to almost nothing at the end, and then back up again, just in time to leave.
Yeah, it wasn't me. I was on a slow decline all day. There was a high point a couple hours ago because I had a Klondike bar after dinner.
What would do for a Klondike bar?
Did you know they have Klondike bars with Rocky Road ice cream inside?
No, I did not know that.
It's fantastic. I didn't know that either, but Amanda picked some up at, I don't know, Walgreens or something when she was out the other day. They are, they're delicious. I like the Rocky Road, especially when it's covered in other chocolate.
I don't know. Nothing against Rocky Road. I just was never big on Klondike bars.
No, I wasn't either. It's really more about the ice cream at this point than the actual bar itself. Because it's messy. You get little chocolate crumbly bits that go all over your shirt or whatever.
Mm. So you get you like a lobster bib. Klondike on it.
Do they make bibs that have like a little like tray that it curls out so it can like catch things?
You mean like a feed bag for a horse? You just fill it up with Klondike bars?
No, it's not that I'm concerned about my shirt per se. It's that like the little bits of chocolate that flake off of the Klondike bar, I don't want them on my floor. So I want the bib to like, you know, have like a little trough that catches them, and then I can just take the bib off and throw the trough in the trash can.
Or you could just not eat Klondike bars.
Well, that's not really an option.
Why?
Because Klondike bars are delicious.
But you just said that you don't really care about the Klondike bars, you just care about the ice cream in them. So
well,
why don't
we
you
have
just
Klondike bars that are full of Rocky Road ice cream, and they are not going to be discarded until, you know, until they're in my stomach.
Okay, so tomorrow, go get regular ice cream, and then you'll be set.
You're missing the point. I already have the Klondike bars. This is a sunk cost, my friend.
I know. That's why I said tomorrow.
No, I'm not going to eat an entire box of Klondike bars.
I don't know how many are in a box.
I think there's like six or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a bit much. It's a bit much.
It's not a bit delicious.
No. I bet it's all full of high fructose corn syrup and stuff.
Yeah, probably. But at least it comes in those shiny little tinfoil wrappers.
Well, that's the important part.
Yeah.
You need it for solar deflection. and to make sure that nobody can read your Klondike bar's thoughts.
So you're saying I should have put the wrapper on my head when I was done with it?
Yeah, well, then you'd have a different chocolate crumb problem because it'd be all over your head.
I don't know. It might create a nice sheen for the hair.
An adhesive.
Enhance my natural curls.
Okay. Sure.
Sure.
You go do that, and then you just have some like some follow up on that, and I'm just gonna put my money down now on it not being good. So
follow up on the success or failure of me putting chocolate in my hair.
Yeah, sure. Let's go with success. That's a word that seems applicable for that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. What did you have for dinner?
Pizza.
Pizza.
Yes. A little personal mushroom one. I'm not really big on mushrooms, but they were like the fancy mushrooms, so it's fine.
Was it one of those like Red Baron French bread pizza things that they used to give us in middle school?
No, God, no.
Do you remember those?
Yeah, no, that wasn't even Red Baron. That was... It's a very special kind of like American cafeteria pizza that gets mass produced.
They would take like a stale baguette and cut it in like 8-inch chunks, and then just take half of it and just slop sauce and gross cheese on it.
Oh no, I thought you were talking about the those trapezoid ones.
Trapezoid.
Because they basically make them in these big long sheets, and then they'd. In order to make them look like pizza slices, they would just be on a on an angle a little bit, but they were clearly rectangles that just had like one side on an angle.
No. There's like a, you can get a microwavable version of this. They had something similar in the school, but it's basically like a third of a baguette, just sort of with pizza.
Yeah, it's just like Stouffer's French bread pizza. I don't like that either.
It's horrible, is what it is.
It's too much bread. I mean, I don't like bagel bites. I basically like a low bread to toppings ratio for whatever horrible mass-produced pizza thing I'm going to be eating.
So you're a New York pizza guy, not a Chicago pizza guy.
Oh, most definitely. Mm. And but you know, I'm not like one of those people who's just going to be like a total stickler about it, and you know, turn my nose up at any kind of pizza that comes my way because, hey, it's still pizza. But you know, I'm not going to go out of my way for like Little Caesars or anything. I mean,
oh God, I don't think I've ever eaten at a Little Caesars.
Well,
or I mean, I guess you can't eat there because it's all carryout stuff, right?
Yeah, it's all to go stuff. So you could do that sometime. You could get it to go.
I'd rather not.
Yeah, no.
Our closest Little Caesars, I believe I'm aware of its location, is much further away than a an actual restaurant that sells pizza. That's quite nice. And there's also a Domino's and a Pizza Hut in between there as well.
That's really exciting. Do you realize that all we've done is talk about cockroaches, scorpions, Klondike bars, water heaters, and different kinds of really terrible pizza?
I'd say that's a rather substantial accomplishment for 11 minutes.
Yeah. Well, at least we didn't eat monkey brains.
Yeah, the Cantonese cuisine?
Yeah, I don't think that's
I'm not sure that's accurate, no.
I didn't vet it, but I'm
wait, gonna go out. Where did they have the monkey brains in Indiana Jones?
That was in India.
Ah, see, that would
it was the second terrible movie with his horrible shrieking wife. Ugh, God.
Oh right.
She screams so much, so much.
Well, you know, there were spiders and there were things crawling on the floor. So you know, what do you do? You scream, and the bugs go away.
It is genuinely one of my least favorite Steven Spielberg movies out of everything he's done.
Well,
I think I would rather watch AI than watch that.
I've only seen a portion of AI.
You didn't even see that you weren't treated to the full craptastrophe?
When they got to like kids being jealous of each other and like eating food and like face melting, and it was like, what is happening and why am I watching this?
It's a very peculiar movie, because it was going to not be a Steven Spielberg movie, and then it was, and then Steven Spielberg Spielberged it up.
It was a Kubrick movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was going to be until he unfortunately died.
Yeah. Huh. I might have to give it a shot. I mean, I've always kind of wanted to see it, but nobody ever really speaks about it. I mean, not just in high regard. Nobody really ever speaks about it in general, so I'm not really sure what to
make. It's just not really that good. I mean, it's got a really irritating main character, but it does have Jude Law, who I think is quite good in it. And there's some neat effects for the time, but they don't really relate to anything, and they're not really that neat now. So it's not like, go back and see how they used to do it in the golden ages or anything. But it's worth it just to get to the ending so that you can flip every table in your house and burn the TV. Because it is that ending. Oh God, what a terrible, terrible ending. And this it's not a podcast about that movie, and I won't spoil it for anybody. So go check that out. I'm sure it's a lovely ending, and you'll love it, and everything's great.
They do a Pinocchio and turn him into a real boy, right?
I'm not gonna talk about it.
No. The humanity was in him the whole time.
Nope, I'm not gonna talk about it.
Wait, I got that wrong. Sorry, Sid. You know, it is a good movie.
Clue.
Also, Gone Girl.
You see, I was actually I've been reading alternating opinions on Gone Girl. Some people are like, oh, it's a great movie, and other people are like, oh, this is crap, and it's really long and boring. So
it's not that long, I don't think.
Isn't it like 3 hours or something?
No, I think it was maybe 2.5. I mean, but it's
two and a half. Oh yeah, it's so short compared to 3 hours. Two and a half.
I don't know, it didn't feel long. It's a book adaptation, what do you expect? And I rather enjoyed it because I'm a deranged psychopath, apparently.
Well, that's because you love David Fincher so much.
I do. I do. He's the love of my filmmaking life.
He could take a crap in a Klondike foil wrapper and hand it to you, and you would be so happy.
Yeah, as long as he didn't move the camera, you know, like on his shoulder or anything.
No, I think it would just fly through.
It's got to be on a tripod or a dolly, though.
It's got to have a CG kitchen island put in. And
yeah, omniscient is the word.
Yeah.
No, that was a weird like teenage phase in Fincher's life where everything was photogrammetry and flying through the handles of various kitchen items.
I'm not a huge fan of that.
No, I don't think he is anymore either, because he doesn't do that anymore.
Mm.
I don't think he's done it since Panic Room. Wait, Panic Room was after Fight Club?
Yes.
Yeah, so that was the last one.
I never saw Panic Room.
It's fine.
Yeah, that's why I never saw it.
You know what this podcast has done? It's ruined me. I've started saying it's trailing off and then saying it's fine to about a lot of things, and that's just become my way of saying, you know what, that's just not for me.
Well, I got into a rather heated argument with Casey List because I saw him say on Twitter over the weekend to someone that Shawshank Redemption is a good movie, and I said it's boring. Just not really, just, you know, not just to troll him, but also because I genuinely do find it to be a rather boring film. It's not a bad movie. It holds no interest for me at all. The cinematography by Roger Deakins is beautiful. Acting performances turned in by the warden, and it's all good stuff. I just get very bored with it.
Well, let me state for the record that you are wrong. It is a wonderful movie. But what is it about it? You can't like empathize with the character. You don't get into it.
The pace is slow.
Well, that's, I mean,
I'm just not. I'm not a slow pace movie person. Just not. Something's got to explode. Like, I can't. I can't just sit there for that.
All of these movies from like the 90s and 80s have absurdly slow paces as well. I mean, we're not talking about Transformers where everything is exploding all the time.
No. I mean, I'm not talking about Michael Bay stuff. I'm just saying I was being a little silly when I said that. But it's the pace is just really slow. And it drives me nuts.
You don't think that maybe like goes hand in hand with the fact that the guy is in prison supposedly for the rest of his life?
Well, that's fine. It's all I'm saying is I just don't like the movie. And so I had to clarify this to Casey, who was
understandably irate.
I was going to say incandescent with rage, but yeah.
I don't think he was probably glowing.
No, well, that's...
Unless he recently exfoliated or something.
No, but that's just an expression, Dan.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I like to take it literally.
You literally like to take it literally?
I literally like to take it literally.
Okay.
Me and Drax.
Mm.
Did you hear he got apparently cast as the bad guy in the next Bond movie?
Oh, that poor movie.
Yeah.
He's
flying with his tattoos and his red skin, and he's going to beat up James Bond.
We talked about this a little when Matt Alexander was on, but I'm not really big on the Daniel Craig movies. I Casino Royale just had a lot of action, but not a lot of the cheese ball Bond stuff that I like, and so it just wasn't for me. And then I never felt compelled to watch Quantum of Solace because it was so universally panned, and it was supposedly an extension of the events of the first movie that I didn't like very much. I just went straight to Skyfall, and Skyfall was fine. Skyfall was good. I liked a lot of it. There were large sections of the movie that were ponderous and made no sense, especially involving the villain, Javier Bardem, and the whole, like, what was it, the hacking and the island, and that, like, it was all over the place.
Yeah, he had a server farm in like an abandoned condo on an island that had like radiation or something.
yeah, for doing things, but maybe not. It doesn't really seem to matter.
He was the biggest problem in that movie. None of his motives made any sense, but that's fine.
I liked all the stuff with M and with Daniel Craig. Their banter. I like the stuff at the house when they go and they do their, you know, defend the house montage. Well, you got
the Home Alone setting up the booby traps montage.
Yeah, you have to. You can't just go to some house in some Scottish marsh and then just sit there for the bad guys to show up. I do question the tactical planning that went into isolating themselves to this extent, but it's just not, they're not fun, and I just want more fun in my Bond stuff. And to hear that the next one is going to also be out, it's just
that another one is going to exist.
Yeah, it's just I know that I would just kind of rather have some more slapsticky stuff. I don't want to watch Jason Bourne.
Well, then I would probably probably advise against watching Gone Girl then, because it is not fun or slapsticky in any way. It is serious and deranged and awesome.
Okay. Well, I'm really not in a rush to go see a 2.5-hour movie.
You know what? I'm looking it up right now.
Okay.
It's not that long.
Are you just saying that because you were so engrossed with David Fincher's presence?
I was. 2 hours, mm-hmm. 29 minutes, so I was right.
Okay.
That's not that long of a movie.
That's pretty long.
That's pretty much the average length of most films these days.
No, I don't really think that's accurate. There's a lot of shorter stuff. Okay.
Just like the acting is so good in that movie.
Ben Affleck?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he did great. Neil Patrick Harris was fantastic. Of course, Rosamund, fantastic.
Just, NPH is in it?
Yeah. He's doing some stuff that he hasn't done before, that's for sure.
I don't even know what that would be.
I don't want to give anything away. It's too good.
Okay. I'll be sure to wait for it to show up on Netflix in 10 years.
Don't do that. In the meantime, we'll get to something more of your speed.
Mm-hmm.
The 1985 cinematic game show, Clue.
Mm-hmm.
This movie...
It's not a game show.
It's a game.
It was a board game.
Yeah. Like, first of all, the entire premise of turning a game into a movie, I know that's more common now because studios are utterly desperate, but in 1985, it's curious that they actually did this, and it turned into something that is what most games turned into movies should be. It just like an hour and a half of pure fun.
Yeah, well, see, this is also actually the first board game movie, the first property developed from a game, which is interesting. But the real key to success here is the people involved, which were John Landis and... the wonderful person who I can't remember the name of, Jonathan Lynn, who I didn't recognize at all any of the times I've ever seen his name show up. But apparently he was really big with UK stuff, with Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister and that whole series. And that explains a lot about the comedy in this film, because it is not typical American comedy. He wrote the screenplay for this, and so... It's very strange because, and he directed it, so it's got this whole thing of these really witty, like, turn of phrase things, like a lot of really subtle stuff. It's very dry in parts, and it's offset, though, by this incredibly wacky physical comedy that is almost like Three Stooges level.
Yeah.
It winds up making this like perfect blend of a film, and a lot of that has to do with the casting. And Tim Curry is amazing.
Yeah,
Eileen Brennan is amazing. Martin Mull is pretty good, but not really memorable. Madeline Kahn is fantastic. Christopher Lloyd, Michael McKean. Leslie Ann Warren, who, fun fact, was not even going to be in the film. She was the role of Miss Scarlet was going to originally be played by Carrie Fisher.
And yeah, you mentioned that. That's insane.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I told you, but I didn't tell our listeners.
Well, hello, listeners. We don't address the listeners. Don't talk to them. Look over here.
I'm talking to them right now.
Look away, Joseph.
I'm breaking the fourth wall. Listen to me, listeners.
You're literally ruining the show right now.
You know, well, that doesn't take much. And so the good part is she went into rehab. And so then we got Leslie Ann Warren in the role of Miss Scarlet, and I think she's great. And I don't really think I want 1985 drugged out Carrie Fisher in this movie, so I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, Leslie Ann Warren, she looked so familiar, and I couldn't place it, and I still can't. And I just think it's because she looks like Susan Sarandon that I kept staring at her, wondering who she was.
Yeah, I think it's the eyes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and that, which is also another interesting connection, because this is also another murder committed in a mansion house that people are driving up to in the middle of the night with Tim Curry in it. The other one, of course, being Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Never seen it.
I'm sorry. Back that up.
I have never seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
You've never?
Well, I mean, I've seen clips here and there as it's been.
But you never sat and watched the whole thing?
No, I've never gone to any of the live show things that they apparently do in Tempe around here.
Dan.
Yeah.
I'm judging you right now.
I'm sure you are.
I'm judging you really, really, really harshly.
That's fine.
Okay. All right, moving on. We have the, you know, I guess we should just describe the setting, because obviously it's not really like the board game.
Well, I've got a couple other just general things to say about this. I am also not familiar with Jonathan Lynn. I guess that makes sense when you describe that he has done a great deal of British humor. Because, yeah, there is a lot of really clever stuff in here and a lot of subtle humor and just things that just unexpected and clever dialogue, especially for 1985 and this kind of stuff. But, yeah, the physical humor is utterly ridiculous at times, and I wonder what John Landis's contribution to this and how much of this was him. But the other thing that in the beginning of this movie was utterly flabbergasting is just the weird sexual innuendo that is utterly pervasive for the first like 20 minutes. Just everyone doing incredibly inappropriate things, which is another thing that it's like, is that Landis, or where did that come from?
Be more specific.
All of the like groping and staring at cleavage and the outfits themselves. Oh. And it's just like, what? They make like a point of like calling it out in like specific shots and actions and stuff. And it's like, why is that here? What's going on?
This is just goofy.
It felt very odd, and I don't know why. It was unexpected, and I was just like, why are we doing this overtly sexual nonsense now? Anyway,
okay.
Yeah, it was, I was confused. You didn't get that, though.
No. What's your email? Okay.
What are you emailing me?
I'm not sending you anything.
Are we just stopping now?
No, I thought you were stopping.
No, you stopped.
You stopped. All right, so.
Now I'm looking at my inbox.
Mm-hmm. How's that inbox looking?
It's empty.
Mm-hmm.
Is there supposed to be something here?
I don't know. It's probably a metaphor. No, eventually, I'm sure. Someday.
I keep pulling to refresh.
Okay. Well, you keep pulling on it. So the movie
set in 1954 New England, which the vague premise being oh, for the love of the backdrop being communism as sort of a motivation for a lot of these underhanded blackmailing dealings that we're given to understand exist, but we don't really know why at the very beginning. But all of these people apparently have one thing in common, in that they are anonymously gathered for a dinner, and they all work in Washington somehow.
Yes. Well, and we don't know if communism is a red herring or not, but
we don't know yet whether or not communism is a red herring.
We don't know. I mean,
it has not yet explicitly been said to us.
No, there's some speculation that it's all because they have government jobs, which occurs first when they're having a dinner together, and they some of them express that they are familiar with some of the other guests outside of this setting. That there is a prior existing relationship between them, which is interesting because it's clear that not all of them know who all of the other ones are, and some of them have met or have seen photographs of some of the other people. And it sets a tension in place for how the audience should feel about each of these people interacting. Because we know, as the audience, that someone's going to die. Maybe more than one person, maybe six, but we don't know when that'll be happening. And so we start to piece together how all these people could be related so that we can see the motives behind why someone would want to blackmail someone, why someone would want to get revenge on the blackmailer. There's all these little clues and hints, that are dropped throughout the whole opening, where if you go back and you watch it, like, I don't know, 20 times or something, you start to pick up on some of these discrete little moments, like some of them's not very subtle at all, like when Madeline Kahn reacts to seeing Yvette. Obviously, they know each other. Or when Mrs. Peacock is sipping her soup, and when she's having her monkey's brains and says that it's her favorite recipe. Like all of those little things that are in there are funny, and they're actually pretty obvious on a second viewing, but it does sort of like start to give you like all these little tiny pieces to put together for how they all know each other.
Yeah, and it's so weird that for a movie based on a game, which is ostensibly in a pretty flimsy proposition, this all plays out as if it were actual, you know, just like a regular story with this goofy slapstick mode of direction and dialogue on top of it. It's all like a fully fleshed out story that is engaging, whether or not they have ridiculous names like Colonel Mustard.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're all fake names for the purposes of anonymity. So that yeah, actually,
even if the game never existed, this movie still could exist completely by itself, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I've never actually played the game,
what's your email address? I'm going to email you an iTunes download for the game Clue.
do they even have an iOS one?
No, I'm joking because you sent me the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah. Surprise listeners, I sent him the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
You were so angry that apparently you had to send it to me right now.
Yes.
All right.
Well, so. If it's anything like Dune, you'll watch half of it.
I can... No, never mind.
Uh-huh. And so, you were saying the interesting thing about this movie...
Is that it's a completely standalone property, even without the game, and just this, I mean, the characters having their silly pseudonyms fits perfectly with this farcical premise of everyone being gathered together because they all have something in common. They don't know, like, I don't know if this movie was the genesis for, like, those murder mystery party things that people do these days that I've heard of, apparently, but this is exactly the kind of thing that people do, and it's kind of hilarious.
No, I mean, that has existed for a long... I think there were even, like... I don't know. It's murder mystery stuff's been around. and there was actually a film that Eileen Brennan, who plays Mrs. Peacock, was in that was also a comedy takeoff on the horror genre that came out in the 70s. So this is her second time being in one of these movies, and that was called Death by Murder, with Truman Capote in it. and Alec Guinness name. And Peter Falk. And Maggie Smith.
Peter Falk.
Yeah, I haven't seen it because it's not really available anywhere. But it is peculiar looking from the clips I saw on YouTube. The real thing is a lot of time and effort went into this script and not just in terms of dialogue, but in terms of plotting things out because. Spoiler alert for the audience, There are three endings to this film. And there were actually going to be four, but they kind of got rid of it because it was not very good. But that's three endings that are possible out of all of the events that occur in the film that just split at the very last second. So,
do we have any indication as to why they did this? Is this like a hint at the fact that the game is obviously you can play it multiple times with multiple endings?
Yeah. And when it came out, I don't know this because I didn't see it when it came out, but this is, I mean, I don't know this from firsthand experience. I know this because I read it. Anyway, so they had different showings where you would only get one ending. The thing of showing all three endings is unique to when it was available in home video and when it was played on television. You know, whenever your crappy local syndicate television show, like a television station like WTOG Year 44, would decide to play a movie to take up time because they don't have any actual programming, and they would play Clue a lot. And so that's how you would see it, and you would see all three of those endings spliced in there with some commercials. Which is good. Great stuff. With the little title cards.
When you say the theatrical releases only had one of the three endings, did it just like vary based on which theater you went to or which state you were in or what?
Well, according to what I was reading, it would vary depending on theater, and some theaters would have multiple ones some places would mark on the movie show times which one of the endings it was, A, B, or C, so that you didn't, you know, pay to go watch the same ending again.
People would burn a movie theater to the ground if they did that these days, because they would just be accused of trying to extort additional money out of the audience. But whose idea was that? You think that was a studio ploy to get him to see more, or was that just Landis being kind of a nut?
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you. I mean, given the amount of effort that went into it, I appreciate it. But I will say that even though I've never seen a movie experience where I've had to go sit and watch the movie three times in a theater to get all three endings, I still prefer having the three endings together because I think it gives it a completely different set of a completely different humor to it at the end. Like, just the fact that they're all together, that they're all spliced one after the other. Like, if you just saw that straight through, and then it was only one of those endings, it wouldn't be nearly as funny as seeing the three.
I thought you were going to say, like, they put the three different endings in front of test audiences, and they all came out equal, so they just decided to stick them together. Or they couldn't make up their minds as to which one they liked more, so they just did all of them.
No, there was only... They shot a fourth one that I said, and they removed it completely. But that was Jonathan Lynn's choice. After he saw it, he was like, it's too dark and weird. It doesn't make any sense. So he got rid of his own little baby there. But and that was one... I think that was another one where Wadsworth did it, but under weird circumstances. So the only ones that remain in the film are... the one where Mrs. Peacock did it, the one where Mrs. Scarlet did it, and Miss Scarlet did it, and the one where Wadsworth did it, where he was Mr. Body all along, and of course Mr. Green busts him at the end. But those three endings together are way funnier than just any one of those endings.
Yeah, and now that I'm thinking about it, how weird would that have been? Because this is only an hour and a half long movie, and the last 30 minutes are the three endings, so. It would have been a 70-minute movie if they would only have done one ending?
Movies used to be shorter. This is what I'm talking about with pacing. You don't need a two-and-a-half-hour David Fincher boring fest.
It's not a boring fest, but even this is slow up until the last, 40 minutes.
Well, it does have a different pace. At the very start of the movie, it is excruciatingly slow where all the guests are arriving at the house. That could be a little snappier, but it's
if Ali were there to stand behind the director and snap your fingers at him.
Yeah, I'd just be like, "Hey, Jonathan,
let's make it snappy. Come on,
yeah, yeah.
get with the soup slurping program here.
Yeah, tighten this up. Well, no, see, the thing is though, once they're all sitting down for dinner, I think that's actually interesting because things are starting to unfold in terms of their dialogue. But before that, there's not much dialogue between these characters, and that's why I think that part is a little boring.
Yeah, well, I mean, Tim Curry gets poop on his shoe, and then they revisit that joke like four times with everyone sniffing the air wondering who if they have poop on their shoe.
Yeah, well, comedy's doing the same thing three times. And
is that how comedy works?
Yes, yes.
Is that why we're failing, because there's only two of us to do the thing twice?
That's what she... Never mind.
Let's do those jokes zero times.
No, I can't help it. I've been talking to Casey too much. I guess we should just kind of pick up with
I have more questions though.
Okay. But what are your questions?
This is a $15 million movie from 1985 that takes place in precisely one setting. Like I want to know, well, first of all, it probably all went to production design, but like, how long did they shoot this? And is this another one of those cases, like, what was Joss Whedon's movie that he just did recently, like, at his house, the Shakespeare, where he just got all his friends together in a house and just shot a movie over, like, 2 weeks?
No, they shot this on, everything was on a soundstage except for the ballroom, was in a house in Pasadena. And the exterior of the house was also the same house in Pasadena.
But it's like utterly simplified into like basically one setting, and it's really just playing within that setting, and they do so many great things.
Yeah, no, I think they do a fantastic job. The lighting could use a little work in some spots. It's a little dingy.
It's a little made for TV movie sometimes, but.
Yeah, particularly when they're in, like, the, what is it, the lounge or the study, the lighting in there is just really dark. But it's fine. I mean, it's that wonderful film celluloid quality of giant flecks of film grain.
And the other thing, I wonder, I mean, obviously, this being entirely about the dialogue and the humor of the thing, again, since I mostly watch movies for our show on my laptop here with my big stupid headphones, there's a lot of questionable audio edits and bad ADR in this movie. So I wonder how many of the jokes were tweaked down to the last minute.
Well, it wouldn't have been the last minute because this is all very mechanical. Remember, this is 1985. This is not like,
well, by
let's fire
last minute,
up the
I
Avid
mean,
and screw with everything.
Right. By last minute, I mean, they've already shot the movie and they're changing dialogue.
Yeah, there are some parts in there, but it generally feels like they were trying to fix things that weren't clear. It's not as bad as like in Galaxy Quest, where Sigourney Weaver is clearly saying something totally different than what her lips are doing. There is something though where I don't know why they didn't use ADR for when Mr. Green first gets to the house and they're talking in the rain outside.
Yeah, it's just, it sounds like somebody left the recorder like in the other room and it's just echoey. You can barely hear it.
Yeah, well, and you hear all the water over them. And it's just like, guys, this wasn't a good idea. Just fix that one. That one should have been cleaned up. But there are some other parts in there, yeah, I agree, where it's a little out of sync with what's happening.
Well, that and like the ADR, they tried to add a little bit of like the room tone echo that is present in that large main area of the house. And just you can tell the post recording echo is nothing like the actual natural echo. It just sounds like it sounds electric and weird and just bad.
Okay.
But the one thing when Mr. Body like yells, "It's all a hoax," and like runs like across the room or something, I think that's an instance where he absolutely did not say that, and it just didn't line up with him at all.
I think that all of his dialogue was dubbed over because
a lot of it was for sure.
Yeah, his lips are barely moving, which makes me question whether or not anyone could actually hear him. I think that he was probably dubbed over because he wasn't clear. Because if you look at him, his lips are just like millimeters apart.
He wasn't the strongest role in this movie, was he?
No. Well, supposedly he was cast because his name's Lee Ving, and the filmmakers thought that was funny for Mr. Body will be Lee Ving.
There's no way he got cast because he has a silly name.
I read that on Wikipedia, so that could be true.
Well, the source of all knowledge that is 100% accurate. He was apparently in Flashdance and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Good for him. I mean, oh, well, that reminds me. There was another movie I forgot to mention when we were talking about Jonathan Lynn. He did My Cousin Vinny.
Did he really?
Yes.
I love My Cousin Vinny. That makes sense. That makes total sense.
I love My Cousin Vinny, too. A lot of people don't like it, but I like it.
Well, those people are horrible people, and they are wrong.
Okay, well, I'm glad you could come back on my side now. I'll forgive you for your David Fincher stuff.
No. I am not going to let that comment go by. David Fincher is fantastic.
What if David Fincher had done My Cousin Vinny?
That would be... they would end up getting executed. That would be an incredibly dark movie. There would be no humor in it whatsoever. Ralph Macchio's head would end up in a cardboard box.
Okay.
Spoilers?
What's in the box? Yeah.
Whoa, there was a Ferris Bueller TV series that was going to happen?
Yes.
He did the pilot for that. He directed the pilot for the Ferris Bueller TV series.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Sergeant Bilko. Okay, wow.
I never saw Sergeant Bilko.
Well, you know, it's in the same vein, but it's anyway.
Okay.
Moving on back to Clue. I don't even know if we could discuss, like, the general plot of this movie. It's all misdirection as to who killed who and what did what, and everyone's being blackmailed by Mr. Body, and everyone has something to gain by killing him, and he does die, but then he's not dead, but somebody sneaks around and kills him, and it's all a matter of figuring out who done it and why.
Yeah, but that's what makes it so interesting.
Well, what makes it interesting is the utterly absurd characters and people and the ridiculous dialogue in this.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is also quite funny.
I hate her and the flames on the side of my face.
Heaving breath. she's fantastic, and supposedly she ad-libbed that.
I totally believe it. She's from Blazing Saddles. She's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. And but there are a lot of really great things in here where it's just really dry, so you might completely miss it. It might completely go over your head when you're listening to them talk, and it'll be, you know, like when they're talking about the negatives, he's positive that nobody's in the house. It's a, you know, double negative, and there's a whole thing. Like, it's just fantastic stuff. Like the interplay, the exchange between all of these people couldn't be better. In my opinion.
I love when they do the multiple endings that basically they have the same line, but it's read by a different person in almost every different ending.
Yes. There's a red herring.
And then Tim Curry just relentlessly sprinting back and forth to try and retrace the steps of the killers going back and forth, and everyone trying to keep up with him, and he's basically running the opposite direction because they can't keep up. And my favorite is when he runs in to grab the knife out of the study or whatever it was, and he basically flops his entire body down on the desk and grabs the knife with his hand without moving his hand, like, away from his face, and then he pulls his whole body up. So basically he picks the knife up off the desk with his entire body.
Yeah.
And then just runs back out, just, you know, never breaking his face, not like being silly or laughing about it, but it's just the most absurd thing I've ever seen.
Oh, and also the way he drags everyone back and forth through the whole thing. poor Mr. Yes. Green.
I love when he runs up the stairs with Mrs. White. Like, he's got her by the arm and he's dragging her up the stairs and she's not keeping up. So he basically just flops her down on the steps and keeps running past her.
She like goes limp onto the steps. Yeah,
just drops her body on the steps and keeps running.
Yeah. Oh, it's so funny.
But that's like the endings are the last 30 minutes of this movie, which is rather substantial for such a short movie. And it's kind of like the entire, it's just never ending. Because it's they keep the pace so fast in the endings that they get through the ending fast. But as you said, we have three of them, so we reset and we do it all over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's just utterly manic.
Yeah, well, and a lot of that has to do with the crazy over the top music, because the score here by John Morris is delightfully campy. Is how I would describe it.
And the score barely makes an appearance until like when the instance where they start to split up and start to search the house. For the most part, it's pretty quiet and just sound effects up until then.
Well, that's because it's mainly all about that one really manic, crazy, happy theme that's there. You know, the sort of main theme that they play at the beginning and then during each of the title cards, and like when things are, when everyone's running across the hallway. There's a lot of running. And that's when
Tim Curry's so sweaty.
Yes. But you know, there's some really fantastic stuff in here, in terms of physical comedy, even when things don't make sense, like they still sell it. Like when Wadsworth is shouting, and he says, "Oh, all right, fine. I'm shouting. And then the candlestick falls on his head. Clearly, yes. That was pulled by a little fishing line off camera, because there's just no way.
And even though like the framing was super low angle and you could see the candlestick up on the shelf there ahead of time and you knew it was coming, it was still hilarious.
Yes. 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 And you know, Yvette, God, Yvette. She's obviously in this film for a role of the thing that she does. And her fake French accent is so incredibly bad. It's fantastic. All the stuff there, it's not really a big role for her to play. She mainly, you know, just wanders around a little bit. So it was it's very comedic to see her do anything in here. But
I do. No. One of my favorite bits is when after she's like shouting from the other room and they thought she was being murdered, and they bring her back in the study to sit down, so they're all in the same place, where Michael McKean goes to sit down on a couch, and then like two people just sneak in right in front of him, and then he wanders around to the other couch to try and sit down, and Yvette just takes the last spot right before he can sit down. But just that comedy of watching Michael McKean walk around and like try to sit down, but it's just musical chairs. He missed it, and then he goes and sits on the desk, which he eventually breaks.
It was a drink cart.
But it's just fantastic blocking and directing, and just the humor in absolutely no dialogue and just the simplest of actions, and it's just hilarious to watch.
Oh, of course. And like the things that everyone does to try and avoid the other person being behind them are downright ridiculous, but they're played so seriously by the actors that it's actually quite entertaining. Like when Colonel Mustard and Miss Scarlet are trying to squeeze their way out of the bar. Doesn't make any sense, but I still gotta laugh. Every single time I watch it, I still chuckle. And when Mr. Green and Yvette are going up the staircase, and they are sort of squeezing together, but clearly there's enough room where they don't actually have to squeeze together.
same with coming out of the bar.
Yeah.
You can see that Miss Scarlet is clearly pushing Colonel Mustard like into the wood.
Yeah. That's what, never mind. And so.
Oh God, that's like five. Yeah. It's just, I'm giving you two demerits for that.
No, it was three.
Nah.
Three for comedy. That was the whole point. Anyway.
My God, stop it. Three endings and then three. That's mm-hmm. what.
One plus two plus two plus one. And not.
Which is a great bit of comedy too. There's just so much done with the silly dialogue that just is unrelated to the actual point of what they're doing. But it's like, it's almost like an Abbott and Costello skit at some point where they're doing who's on first at in some of these scenes.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much misdirection and miscommunication with just people standing and talking face to face that it's hilarious.
Oh yeah. I mean, it, all the stuff where it should be like clear as day what they're saying that there's no ambiguity to what's being said at all, but they still manage to inject that ambiguity for comedic effect. Like when Mrs. White was saying that her husband had wanted to kill her publicly, and Miss Scarlet immediately questions, "Why would he want to kill you in public?" And Tim Curry says, "No, she meant that he would kill her in public." Anyway, it's better in the movie than my delivery there. Let me see if I can make that line reading worse. Anyway,
it's fine. But of all the things, like and I know they do it for like plot purposes because, you know, there's obviously some connection with the FBI, but like J. Edgar Hoover personally calling the house was completely unbelievable and hilarious, just as like a thing, because this being a 1985 movie about 1954, it's just hilarious to think like, okay, we need a plot point related to the FBI and the search for communism. Okay, we'll have J. Edgar Hoover. And how will J. Edgar Hoover be involved? He'll just literally call the house. And he'll just call up and ask to speak to somebody.
Well, he was a rather infamous person, so it was a good way to have shorthand for...
Right, but I don't think he was going around making house calls.
Well, there's a wife of a senator, and someone from the State Department, and someone that works for you-know-who. And, you know, there's a whole house full of a nuclear scientist, a wife of a nuclear scientist. So there's a lot of reasons why he might be... why he might care. But I also... that line, the fact that he calls, I think mainly exists just so they can say the line, is the FBI in the habit of cleaning up after multiple murders? Why do you think it's run by a man called Hoover? Because that...
Which is a terrible line, but when read by Tim Curry is so great.
Yes, yes, yes.
He is the weirdest, just in his personality, his look, especially in 1985, he's just the strangest man, and he's just so great to watch.
And you're saying this having not even seen Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I've seen pictures of what he looks like in that movie, and I don't need that level of ridiculousness to love Tim Curry.
Okay, so that was taking it too far?
We'll see, once I click the thing you emailed me.
No, I don't think you're gonna like this at all, but it's $15 well spent. And
can I email you a ticket to Gone Girl?
You could. I'm not gonna go see it.
You should.
I don't have the free time.
But you got free time to do this week. Look, let's end the call right now and you go straight to the theater right now, young man.
Are you kidding? I'm not doing that.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Yes.
Singing Telegram. They don't do that anymore, do they?
No. No.
Is that a thing? When did that stop being a thing?
I have no idea.
They didn't even let her get the whole message out. Like, what was the telegram?
Well, that was the funny part.
I wanted to know what she had to say.
No, that was the whole thing. It was just entertaining because the door opens, and immediately she goes into her insanely happy little dance number. Da-da-da-da-da-da, I am your singing telegram. And then right on cue, that's when the gunshot happens. And it really finishes off that scene perfectly. You don't want her to, like, realize what's going on or be like, oh, I recognize you, or say anything at all. Like, just the fact that it ends right there is hilarious.
No, I don't want her to, like, recognize somebody or, like, be in on the plot. But I'm just thinking, like, to place that order for her services, somebody had to send her money and something to go sing at this place at this time. And I want to know what they sent and what she was going to sing. I want the deleted scenes from the director's cut that tells me what the singing telegram was.
I don't think there were going to be any scenes for that, Dan. I think that is what they call a MacGuffin.
You write fan fiction. You write it then.
I'm not writing fan fiction for the dead telegram girl in Clue.
Is that any more ridiculous than the things you've written fan fiction for?
Probably not.
then I think you should do it.
Ugh.
They were going to remake this movie, which got shelved. So if your fan fiction is good enough, theoretically, you can get it made.
No. Well, I don't want them to remake this movie. I think it's perfect the way it is.
No, there's no way anyone could make this movie today.
No, I don't think it's remotely possible. I think the casting would be atrocious. Yeah. I think that it would have a gajillion product tie-ins to things that are just awful. I think that it would just be a horrible, bloated masterpiece of decadent capitalism.
We need is to inject some communism in there to equal it all out. But do kids even have the attention span these days to play a game like Clue?
I don't know. You gotta ask the people that made Battleship.
Ugh. You want to talk about turning a game into a bloated mess? Like, that is the exact opposite of what you should do with a game. And this is the one that works, Clue here. And Battleship was just...
Is Ridley Scott still doing that Monopoly movie?
Monopoly?
Yeah.
I heard there's going to be a Tetris movie.
No, he signed on for Monopoly, but it was years ago. And I still haven't seen or heard anything about it, so I don't know what the hell that is. Maybe he just took their money and he's, like, building a kitchen for himself in another house.
It's a big kitchen.
I don't know.
Maybe, you know, it just got put on the back burner so he can make Prometheus and Prometheus 2. And then Exodus, Gods and Whatevers it's called, Moses versus Moses' brother.
That really looks terrible.
It looks pretty, just like Prometheus, but it does not look like an attractive movie.
Yeah, it does not seem enticing to me, regardless of its visual state. And most of that has to do with the fact that I saw Prometheus and it was just awful. Just awful.
So you're not going to see the second one?
No. I mean,
you kind of have to, though, to see, like, what, maybe he'll answer something about the Alien franchise in this movie now.
The biggest mistake he made was trying to answer anything, because...
Was convincing the devil that... Wait, no. Convincing the...
Dan. No, it was just awful. Like, it shouldn't... None of it needed to have happened in any of the ways that happened. It's just awful. Like, it didn't need to be a prequel to things that wasn't really a prequel. It didn't have to have, like, the allusions to the later films that aren't really allusions to the later films. It didn't have to have any of this stuff in there. It was ridiculous. And the whole thing of, like, I'm not going to spoil anything. Ending, awful. Just atrocious. Just an atrociously bad ending.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's something you can see in the trailer where... No one runs anywhere but straight ahead of the thing that's rolling towards them. But, you know, it's just the least of its problems. It's just, it's a mess. It is a horrible mess. Sorry, you touched a nerve.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's, and then all of the subtle hints as to the tie-ins with Christianity and, you know, the years and the reasons for them wanting to destroy humanity and all that stuff is just it's so subtle as to be not useful for the plot, and so obvious that it's just offensive, just on the face of, like, trying to use it as a plot point.
I mean, it's almost like you took Ridley Scott and brainwashed him, and then put the minds of the Wachowskis into him, and then told them that they were making an Alien prequel, and that's what you got.
It's like somebody fed him some hallucinogens and told him to retcon both his career and the Bible and see what came out of it.
It was pointless. It is pointless, and I don't want to talk about it anymore because it's just going to make me angry. It was
pretty
flames
looking
on the sides of my face.
Fassbender was good, and it looked pretty, and that's about it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, Fassbender was fantastic.
Yeah, he's a robot, I'm sure, in real life.
Well, that's fine. So is there anything left to say on the film? I mean, other than we could just... you know, go through horribly mangling lines from the film.
No, I don't. I almost don't even want to describe scenes or lines, just because this movie, it's not about, like, what the lines are. This is not like a movie that you're going to run around quoting in general to most people. This isn't like a Super Troopers, like, cult classic thing. This is just something that when you watch, it's so fun to be a part of. Like, you're playing a fun game with friends that you just can't help smiling the whole time you're watching it.
I don't know what you're talking about. I quote this a lot in my daily life.
What do you quote in your daily life?
1 + 2 + 2 + 1. Not 1 + 2 + 1 + 1. Of course...
And the people you work with don't think that there's maybe something wrong with you, or you might need to see somebody because you've been sitting at your compositing application too long?
Well, my clue quotes aren't the first clue, so...
Red plus green plus blue plus blue. Wait.
No.
You're not doing color math?
Okay, but I still don't get it.
No, that's not the...
Okay. So, that was funny, because you said three things. there were three colors.
I had a point, but I can't remember what it was. But, okay. In terms of, like, what I like about this movie, it's there are some great lines. There's clever writing in this, but they work so much better in context that it's just watching this movie is the fun experience. And this movie, I can't think of any other movies like this, just even remotely like this, that is the same sort of style and fun as this movie is.
Well, I would say it has a few elements in common with, like, of course, British television, like Fawlty Towers or that sort of thing.
But that's television. Can you think of any movies that this feels like?
Well, there's the Monty Python films, like Life of Brian. Less so, I would say, the Holy Grail. And you know, that sort of brand of humor and comedy. Not the Mr. Bean stuff. Although he was... Rowan Atkinson was selected as a potential Wadsworth. But
really?
Yes, he was too much of an unknown, so the studio didn't want to go with him.
He would be, I think, good and interesting, but he would be completely different from Tim Curry.
Oh, and, totally different.
Yeah, the world cannot continue without this performance from Tim Curry.
No. Honestly, Tim Curry should be in everything. It makes everything better. It's like bacon. Tim Curry is like bacon.
Tim curried bacon?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, curried bacon sounds disgusting.
That sounds really revolting. Yeah.
Wait, that's not...
Like, are we talking about like that terrible curry powder like what you would use in curry chicken salad?
Yeah, you can't... Wait, no, you can't curried beef. Never mind. Which one's...
Pork. Never mind. Anyway, pork is also not a thing. But I mean, we can do whatever we want to, Dan. We're in America. The moving on to the things of the Tim Curry's. So he's good, and I like him in almost everything that he's in. And he even manages to class up a joint when it is not really technically a very good film. And there's a lot of that happened in the 90s. Including Scary Movie 2, which I happen to like, even though it is so stupid.
It was also the bad guy in the Mikhail's Napier remake.
Yes. Oh, God, it's so bad.
I ran into Tom Arnold at a conference held by a company that I used to work for one time. He does not look so great these days.
It's probably all of his curried bacon he's having.
Tim Curry's doing a ton of TV stuff these days. That's great. Although, there's nothing quite like seeing that ridiculous stare.
Yeah, well, he has this weird way of, like, doing this curl with his lips in the corners. When he's,
oh, yeah, he's basically the human version of the Grinch.
Yes, well, and of course that is, in particular, a face that he makes when they dissolve from the Grinch, the Chuck Jones Grinch animated series to Tim Curry's face in Home Alone 2, Lost in New York.
That was the one with the talk boy and stuff.
Yes, yes. And Donald Trump. And the Plaza Hotel. And stuff. And the family went to Florida.
He almost looks like some sort of like chameleon or like actual reptile, because he's got like those eyes that kind of look like they can move independently of each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, he just has such a wacky expression on his face, basically at all times, and I think he's fantastic. So,
has he been in anything with Alan Rickman? Because I want to put those two in a room together and just watch what happens.
No, I don't think he's been in anything with Alan Rickman, off the top of my head. But also, he's not really doing a lot of work these days.
Who, Tim Curry or Alan Rickman?
Tim Curry, unfortunately. Sure.
Well, he's doing voice work.
Well, he's recovering from a bit of a stroke, so in 2013. It's really sad. It's very sad.
Damn it. I was going to make it my life's goal to get Tim Curry and Alan Rickman in something together.
Well, I mean, you can still do it. Just go fast. Do stuff. Make it animated.
They should be in suits, and they should look very fancy and be in a big, expensive house and speak with accents to each other.
Tuxedos.
Well, no, they can do fancy suits. They don't have to be tuxedos.
Can one of them be a tuxedo?
Sure. Which one would you like to put in a tuxedo?
I would like Tim Curry in a tuxedo. He's always he's at his best in a tuxedo.
And you don't want to write fan fiction for Clue.
Mm-hmm. He buttles. So
that was pretty good.
Yeah. What is it that you do? I'm the butler, sir. I buttle. So good.
And again, so many of these lines, they don't work when we say it right now, and I'm sure anyone listening to this is just going to roll their eyes saying this movie sounds dumb, but we are not Tim Curry, and we are not in the midst of this fantastic script.
No, well, if anyone's listening to this, then I hope they understand that they should see this film and that you and I are not actually entertaining at all. And we
I mean, we entertain ourselves, but that's about it.
Yeah, well, that's all anybody can really hope for. That's on a good day. But the whole thing of this film is, like, you can quote from it and horribly mingle these things, because you're never going to come close to the performance that they have, but you can evoke that memory in someone else of that performance in the film. Like, I'm never going to be able to deliver Madeline Kahn's hilarious lines in any of the way that she does, nor can I even do the mannerisms and intonations of Mrs. Peacock, especially when she's at the dinner and she's so flustered because no one will talk and she's very uncomfortable with the silence. It, like, all that stuff, like, you can just say, like, oh, hey, remember that in Clue? Or you quote the line and they'll remember it and they'll be like, oh, that's so funny. Not because you were funny, but because the movie was funny.
Yeah, and it's another way where this is like a shared experience. Like, you actually played the game with somebody and you're recalling the fun time that you had playing the game, because just this movie is still, in my mind, less of a film or cinema and more of just a hilarious, fun experience.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Take that.
I mean, sure. And so, should we do three endings to this podcast? How's this gonna shake out?
I think we're probably three endings deep. We've done a couple different derail endings. Do you want to do one really boring ending and talk about the IBK gear?
Oh my god!
You told me to put it in the document.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Let's cap this off with
no. Dad. We'll do it in the after show after we play the ATP song.
That would be funny if we actually played the no, but
now I want to do it just to do it.
Oh no. Besides, we'd have to talk about cars or something. Jesus.
Oh god. I can talk about cars.
No, because then you're just going to talk about the time that you fixed something that broke on your Ford, and then I'm just going to be like, I think I need to get a car wash, and then that'll be the end of our conversation.
No, we already talked about that. I could talk to you. We could play a game, and you could guess how many empty bottles of water I took out of the back seat of my car at the gas station the other day.
This is a weird game.
Nobody said it was going to be the same kind of game as Clue.
Yeah.
Which is also a weird game.
Promises were not made, that's for sure. 12?
I didn't count. I think it's probably more like 30.
Wait, why did you ask me to guess a number if you didn't even know the number? There was no way to verify this. What the hell kind of game is this? Is this McDonald's Monopoly? What's going on?
I'm making this up on the fly, man. There's nothing... I don't know what I'm doing here.
Uh-huh.
It is really sad, though, that this movie did not nearly make its money back.
Oh, no. It's gone on to be more of a cult classic. And I'm sure it has made up its money in all of the syndicated television viewings over the many years that it's existed.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Basically, this was always on in October and playing on some channel. And so I have seen... Most of my experience seeing this film was in segments of the film, piecing it together into one actual viewing of the film.
Which, honestly, is fine for this kind of a movie.
No, it's not. It's not good. I don't think it's good for this kind of a movie, because then you don't actually understand the whole narrative, since there's so many interweaving parts.
You're assembling the narrative when you see the pieces. That's kind of the way the end goes.
Yeah, but if you don't know what part of it you tuned into... And your first time watching a certain segment of it, or your third time watching another segment, you don't know the relationship chronologically for her. Anyway, it's boring. But fortunately, it's on Netflix, and people can watch it as much as they want.
$3 million USA gross, and just under 15 worldwide. And it apparently cost 15.
Mm-hmm.
$15 million. That's insane.
Yep. Well, inflation.
That's half of what they spent on the Frighteners, right? Didn't we say that was 30?
Yeah, I thought you said like 35, 36, something like that.
That's possible.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't really matter. It's not really the same. But this has been a great another episode of Spooky October Murder Mystery Stuff.
Is that what we're doing? Is that what our theme is?
Yes. You can clip that and put it right at the beginning of the show and just terrify everyone. I got an idea. What if we have three different endings for this podcast and I set up something on the server so it deals a different MP3 file when people go to load it?
I think you would make some people incredibly angry and you would confuse other people.
Oh, I don't really think we have the audience for that.
I don't think I have the XML skills for that, honestly.
Literally dozens and dozens of confused people. So we will not be doing that one.
or will we? Maybe the people listening to this should try and delete and re-download the episode and then listen to it again to see if there is a third ending.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that denial of service. Yeah.
Come on, guys, let's get those listener stats up.
Yeah.
Even if it's artificially inflated.
Yeah.
See, I mean, if movie studios can do it, couldn't we do it? We'll release three different versions of the same thing.
Just keep downloading this episode over and over until you get a good ending.
I don't think it works that way.
It's too bad.
So we can safely say that the murderer was Mr. Steele in his apartment with a microphone.
No.
No?
No. The murderer was in us all along.
It was Joe with the empty bourbon bottle in the hallway.
No, it was Dan with a number between 1 and 20 water bottles in his car at the gas station.
I don't know how I would kill anybody with an empty Dasani bottle.
Well, you have so many of them, and it's Dasani. It's terrible.
Well, some's Dasani and some is this. I'm drinking Nestle Pure Life right now.
Dan.
Oh, this is fantastic. There are tips on the label for Nestle water. It doesn't say pro tip, so I guess it's just a regular person tip. And the tip is keep a bottle of water on your child's bedside table. First of all, I don't have a child, and if I did, he wouldn't have a bedside table because we don't have all that much furniture right now. But is that like a feng shui thing? Aren't you supposed to like keep like water in a place by a mirror or something? I thought that was supposed to be a glass of water, not a bottle of water.
I'm baffled. We're just going to cut bait on that one.
What am I thinking of? That's functional, right? You do the water. I have
no clue what you're thinking of. Why would you think I would know that?
You live in Beverly Hills. Don't they do all that earth energy stuff over there? You got dream catchers in your room right now? Is there one hanging above your laptop to catch the bad kernel panic spirits? I don't know.
Mon Dieu, I also drank the cognac.